Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with poet Julie Kane, whose new book is Naked Ladies, New and Selected Poems. Julie Kane was the Poet Laureate of Louisiana from 2011 to 2013. She's Professor Emerita at Northwestern State University and is currently teaching in the Low Residency MFA program at Western Colorado University. Today, we're talking about her new book, Naked Ladies, New and Selected Poems from LSU Press, which draws on 5 previous volumes in her distinguished career as well as new work. Julie, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan. It's great to be back.
Oh, it's so wonderful to have this beautiful book. But, you know, there comes a stage in a poet's life when it's time for a book like this, a new and selected volume. So what was that like for you to reach that threshold and have to scrutinize your own work in this way?
Oh, gosh, that's kind of a 2-part question. I guess reaching the threshold, you know, when you've been publishing for, you know, 4 decades or something like that, you know, books go out of print or it starts getting, you know, very expensive for someone to try to track down and buy, you know, all of your books. So, you know, it makes sense to try to put together a volume, you know, that has the best poems from the previous books. And, you know, as far as, you know, reaching that stage, I guess, you know, at this age, too, you know, you start looking back over life, you know, at this age and, you know, and start kind of looking at your work, not just one poem at a time or one book at a time, but, you know, kind of as a whole. So I was, you know, definitely in that mood as well.
It's a mood you have to be in, right? I mean, now certain themes run through your work, of course. There's so many confessional poems. There's a love of Louisiana culture and Irish culture as well. There's also the lure of strong drink, the sound of jazz, motherhood, your Irish roots. And these are poems in which the speaker is often a sexy, passionate woman. So what have I missed? What else?
I think you just summed it up. In fact, yeah, could you write that down and I will use it as my talking points in the future?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Happy to. A poem for Julie Kane. What is that like when you're surveying your own work that way? I mean, is there this sneaking little desire in your heart to go, well, that may not be my best poem, but I love it?
Yes. In fact, I asked about a half dozen friends and relatives, my sisters and my niece included, to look at my books and to pick out their favorite poems or the poems they thought were the best. And then I compiled all the results. And if a poem had, you know, 2 or more votes, you know, especially those that had, you know, 3, 4, then I definitely, you know, was going to include it. But there were a few poems that didn't get any votes.
Oh, no.
That I really liked that I had to put in there. So I won't tell you which ones they are.
You needed a bigger electorate. That's what I think.
That's it, yes.
Now, another thing that's run through your work is the circle of poets and people at the Maple Leaf Bar.
Yes.
And talk a little bit about how important that was to you and what that group has meant to the city, really.
Yes. I guess I began going to the Maple Leaf poetry readings right around the time they started in the late 1970s, 78, 79. And they were emceed by the late poet Everett Maddox, who's a beloved character. He died young. I know the crew of Oak has a float with a papier-mâché head of his, you know, on it. But that little group of poets was so supportive of my work. They were, you know, so interesting. The bar was almost like another living room. You know, you could always go there on Sunday for the readings, but you could also always drop in at any time, and there was Everett sitting at the bar, and you could have a, you know, a really deep conversation about poetry anytime you wanted with Everett. And some of the writers who, you know, passed through the Maple Leaf, you know, Yusef Komunyakaa, you know, read there, you know, Peter and Nicole Cooley, you know, just you name it, you know, the best poets from New Orleans, you know, have and elsewhere in the country, you know, passed through there at one time or another. So it was kind of like, you know, kind of like my other living room, you know, for many, many years.
My time did not overlap with Everett's. And but I feel like I know him from reading poems about him.
I just got some really good news, which is that James McWilliams, who has a new biography of Frank Stanford coming out from U of Arkansas Press this year, is now at work on a book about Everett. So he's been, you know, interviewing, you know, the friends from that time period.
Oh, that's great.
Wait to see what he comes up with.
Well, read us from Rhythm and Blues, the poem Maple Leaf Bar, if you would.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that definitely ties in. This is a villanelle, too, you know, funny form where two lines braid in and out, kind of like braiding hair. The Maple Leaf Bar. I wanted to understand the place, the pressed tin ceiling and the out-of-tune piano where the late James Booker played, in a rhinestone eye patch and purple cape, bottles in sunlight like Arabian jewels. I wanted to understand the place. Maddox asleep like a cat on stage, kittens asleep in the storage room. Red Sox, Celtics, and Bruins played in bars that kept my uncles late. They came home singing until they puked. I wanted to understand the Saints. What did you think with your boyish face, a bar rag tucked in your blue jeans loop, giving me all your change to play the jukebox with? Another crazy barfly making eyes at you. I wanted to understand the place, to play with words like Booker played.
Oh, I love that. So many people will understand that immediately.
A lot of people I know will still remember that James Booker had a weekly gig at the Maple Leaf Bar playing piano. Yeah, my favorite musician of all time.
I know. And you honor him by your writing, too.
Oh, thank you.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Julie Kane, whose new book of poems is Naked Ladies. Please be aware that this next section contains references to self-harm. If you or anyone you know are in crisis, please call 988. Now I wonder, well, this, obviously these are some of my favorite poems, but from Body and Soul, I wish you'd read us Lastly a Woman Thinks of Her Face, because that's one of the most chilling poems.
Thank you. And, it, you know, it's funny that you picked that one out, because I wrote that one as a college undergraduate.
Wow.
It was, you know, kind of the days of Women's Lib, and I was taking a social psychology of women course. And one of the things we learned in there was that when women attempt suicide, that unlike, you know, men often will just, you know, this is horrible to talk about, but, you know, men will often just take a gun to their heads, but women will preserve their beauty. You know, they will do things like take pills to preserve their beauty. So that's what I had in mind when I wrote this poem. Lastly, a woman thinks of her face. A woman whose face has failed her flips her skirt like a two-headed rag doll. Her new mouth is a Cupid's bow, a Barbie doll pout. It is tongueless and always calling, help. A woman whose new face fails her turns on the gas in her dollhouse kitchenette or takes too many pink candy pills. Men blow their brains out. A violent woman aims for the wrists, for the thin stems, fragile as Tea Party China. Selfish as a pharaoh, a woman keeps her treasure after death. Surely beauty matters. It is bartered every day for emeralds and chocolates and even an occasional kindness. Think of that. Lastly, a woman thinks of her face. She dies like a doll lying down to blink.
Oh, I'm curious what it was like for you to read that poem in light of the work you did on the Nasty Women Poets anthology.
Oh, yes, that anthology. That anthology was meant to highlight women who were not constrained, you know, by gender roles to be ladylike, to be nice. And I think this is probably the opposite of that.
Yeah.
You know, a woman trapped in those roles from childhood, you know, from childhood playing with dolls and tea parties and you know, and trying to be the good girl. Yeah, so those really are a kind of like two poles, I guess,
right,
of the feminine experience.
You have your little nasty woman radar. We all do now. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Julie Kane, whose new book of poems is Naked Ladies. I have to tell you this. This is one poem that a lot of people associate with you. And I was talking to Jim Davis from the Louisiana Book Festival the other day. And we were talking about you. And he said, you know that poem of hers, Used Book? I said, yes. And it's so funny because I thought right then and there, Julie Kane, you would have gotten two votes for that poem. So
you're right.
So it's just, if you're a book lover or a book person or a writer, it really snaps at your heart. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes, yes. This one too, New Orleanians will probably notice that I moved the location of the bookstore in this poem because the poem's in iambic pentameter, you know, da-da, 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 da-da. And the actual bookstore was on Charter Street, which New Orleanians say charters, but, you know, many people reading the poem would try to say Chartres and absolutely and ruin it. So I had to change it to Royal Street. But should I read that one?
Oh, please do. Please do.
Okay. And it's a little sonnet. Used book. What luck. An open bookstore up ahead as rain-lashed awnings over Royal Street, and then to find the books were secondhand with one whole wall assigned to poetry. And then, as if that wasn't luck enough, to find between Jarrell and Weldon Keys the blue-on-cream familiar backbone of my chapbook, out of print since 83. Its cover very slightly coffee-stained, but aging all in all, no worse than flesh through all those cycles of the seasons since its publication by a London press. Then, out of luck, I read the name inside, the man I thought would love me till I died.
Ah, killer.
Yeah, I should admit that really happened. But it's not as bad as something that happened to the poet David Mason, who was visiting his mother in their hometown and went in the local bookstore and found a copy he had signed to his mother.
Oh, no.
But it turned out she had loaned it to a friend who passed away. And I guess, you know, the estate had put it on there, but he was really shocked.
The book makes its way in the world, though, doesn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? Now, the form of poems is very important to you, mm-hmm. you know, and it's something you worked very hard to master. So I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about making that choice when you're writing a poem.
Oh, that's interesting, because initially when I got to college, you know, I had been writing rhymed poems, you know, kind of secretly, you know, ever since adolescence. And when I got to college, I quickly, you know, recognized that rhyme and meter were way out of fashion, you know, that free verse was the, you know, kind of the dominant mode. So mm-hmm. I abandoned it. And it was only in probably the late 80s that I began, you know, because I loved so much, you know, rhymed poets like Robert Frost and William Butler Yeats and Edna St. Vincent Millay, you know, yeah. John Donne. And I had been raised with, you know, listening, my parents and relatives would sing, you know, old Irish songs and show tunes around a piano. I just loved rhyming lyrics. So I kind of started sneaking back to it, you know, writing poems that I didn't think I was going to show anybody. And at the same time, I became aware that all around the country, in fact, you know, around the world, that there was a movement called New Formalism where a lot of people, you know, were sneaking back to it. And there was even a conference, the Westchester Poetry Conference on Form and Narrative, you know, where mm-hmm. hundreds of people came, you know, every June to kind of, you know, celebrate formal poetry and share poetry and network. So, you know, it was just perfect timing to dive back into it. You know, I've always loved poetry that's heard with the ears, you know, that's not just, you know, for the brain, for the intelligence, but also for the ears. So, you know, that's why form matters to me.
I have this piece of fabric art that the poet Cheryl St. Germain made.
Oh.
And it's called Tipsy Sestina. And she does the form of the poem in fabric.
Oh.
And so when you're looking at it and you look at the colors, you're thinking of the poem. It's really interesting. I'll have to
so
take a picture of it and send it to
colors,
you.
Six colors, right.
Yeah. It's really amazing.
And the arrangement, like a sestina. Oh, that's wonderful.
So there's such pleasure in it in so many ways. You know what I mean?
Oh, I've seen pictures of her fabric art on Facebook, too, and you're very lucky to have one of them.
Yes, I know. Believe me, I know. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Julie Kane, whose new book of poems is Naked Ladies. In your last collection, well, your next to last collection, you had humorous poems and paper bullets.
Uh-huh.
And then you went back to your family roots and Mothers of Ireland. And those weren't particularly entirely new directions for you, but they were perhaps more focused.
Right.
And so talk a little bit about those choices.
Oh, okay. Paper Bullets was probably really an antidote to the book that came before it, Jazz Funeral, mm-hmm. which was very much a post-Katrina book. You know, it had to do with Hurricane Katrina, with my father's death, with the loss of several friends and, you know, in a long-term relationship. And, it was really, as the title says, Jazz Funeral.
Yeah.
You know, a book about grief and loss. And after I finished that book, or kind of at the tail end, as I was finishing that book, I started just writing some silly poems, you know, just to, you know, again, not taking it seriously, but just for fun. You know, I've always
yeah.
loved Dorothy Parker and, you know, kind of that mode. So I started doing that, and then I started getting kind of interested, you know, in humorous poems and light verse, and amassed enough of them. So I thought, oh, maybe I can put a collection together, which I did. with Paper Bullets. I was a little scared that if I published that, that people might not take my other poems seriously, you know, might dismiss it. But certainly many of the same themes run through them, only are, you know, treated with humor rather than with tears, I guess. But and then after that, I really never know which direction my poems are going to take me. But with Mothers of Ireland, I had started getting really interested in family genealogy, you know, in tracing my own family. You know, I knew all my great-grandparents came from Ireland, and you know, I knew my family kept in touch with some of the, you know, the cousins back there. But I had actually made a trip to Ireland in college, and I had a list of relatives to look up. I was with my sister, and we thought, oh, no, if we look them up, they're going to make us go to Mass, you know, they're going to put a curfew on us. So now, you know, now at this age, I'm cursing my younger self. You know, what an idiot I was, because, you know, some of them are gone now. But, you know, suddenly I became, where did they live and what were their lives like? And, you know, when did they come? And, you know, what were their lives like when they got here? So, you know, I started really delving into that. And I wound up getting a certificate in genealogy from Boston University.
And
you know, just really, you know, really kind of going, you know, deeply into that, you know, part of my, you know, of my background. And a lot of the poems in that book, you know, came out of that whole focus. Some of them based on family stories, you know, that were passed down, and some of them based on, you know, actual research that I'd done, things I found out.
And it's such a rich vein to mine, really. I mean, you can write poems like that for a long, long time and not come to the end of it.
Right.
You know, I was blown away reading this by the bravery and honesty of all this, Julie. I mean, you've been so fearless in your work.
Oh, my. Thank you for saying that. That was kind of one of the meanings I had intended with the title, Naked Ladies. You know, it's partly, there's a title poem about the flower, you know, Naked Ladies, nickname for the spider lily. But also, I meant it as kind of tribute to the women confessional poets, you know, Sylvia Plath, Anne Sexton. I'd include Millay, you know, in that group, who weren't afraid to really just, you know, bare all, you know, just speak their raw, honest truth without filters. And, you know, if not for them, I don't think I would have had the courage to, you know, to try to do the same myself.
Well, a poet is a daring thing to be. So, well done.
Thank you.
Really, I had so much fun reading this book. I kept having to stop and read it aloud.
Oh, I'm glad.
Which is always my favorite way to read poetry, as you know.
I'm glad.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Julie Kane, whose new book is Naked Ladies, New and Selected Poems. You can meet her at the New Orleans Poetry Festival in April. Julie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The big event coming up this week is the New Orleans Poetry Festival, which gets underway Thursday, April 10th at 7 at the Saturn Bar. Locals have an opening night gala featuring Rachel Zivex, Andy Young, Brad Richard, Marion Moore, Benjamin Morris, Guy Jackson, and Ariel Francisco. Friday, April 11th is International Night, with French poetry and translation with Frederick Forte, Virginie Poitrasson, Joyce Meniel, and Michelle Notebaum at Café Istanbul. The Saturday Nine featured poets are Ariana Raines and Tango Eisen Martin at 7, also at Cafe Istanbul. Saturday and Sunday, April 11th through 12th, is a small press book fair with readings, roundtables, and workshops at the New Orleans Healing Center and the St. Rock Tavern. For information and the complete lineup, visit nolapoetry.com. Kiese Lehman discusses and signs his first book for children, City Summer, Country Summer, Saturday, April 5th at 2 at Baldwin & Company. The Poetry Buffet presents a reading with Allison Campbell, Paul Casey, Mason Joyner, and Brad Richard, Saturday, April 5th at 2 at Ladder Library. Best-selling author Soman Shanani discusses and signs Coven, his first ever graphic novel, Sunday, April 6th from 4 to 5 at Octavia Books. Chris Champagne discusses and signs Secret New Orleans, Sunday, April 6th from 1 to 2:30 at Blue Cypress Books. And Constance Adler, author of Sight Unseen, and Teresa Tuminello Brader, author of Secret Keepers, discuss the evolution of storytelling, Thursday, April 10th at 6:30 at Blue Cypress Books. Two local authors, Madeline Landry and Sharon LaCour, will be the featured speakers at the Saturday Writers Clinic for April 12th at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Madeline Landry, author of Every Living Thing, a novel, and a memoir, I Have the Right to Remain Silent But Lack the Ability, discusses perceptions in writing from 9:30 to 11 Saturday morning, followed by Sharon LaCour, author of The Meeting of Air and Water. She'll discuss point of view at 11 a.m., free and open to the public. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.